This is Bristol Band Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, June 9th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Very glad to have you with us today. Coming up, Tim Sands says he'll open up some SetNet opportunity Monday in Igooshik.
As soon as the market is ready to buy, we open it up and the fishermen gradually get started over there.
Plus, we'll travel up to the Fisheries Research Institute camp in Aleknagik to see what they're up to this summer and what they have to say about the water temperatures the bay has been seeing for some time.
Warmer conditions have translated into better growth and survival conditions for salmon. So, in fact, during the last 20 years, we're seeing more salmon produced out of these watersheds.
We'll get an update from the floor of the Fish Expo underway in Naknek and check in on a, or rather take a trip around some boatyards to see what's on the preseason minds of some area skippers. Plus a profile on how a language revitalization program in Igiagig has been going and why it's so important.
You go to the language first, and with that you'll get your dance, you'll get your worldview, you'll find your values back.
Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of this week's news. A wildfire sparked Friday or Saturday 40 miles northeast of Dillingham grew to about 1,500 acres this week. Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry said Monday that McGrath-based fire crews responded and were keeping tabs on the fire by air.
We went and checked it out. They sent a plane out there with smoke jumpers. They first saw it. It was about 25 acres, and they went to fuel up in Dillingham and came back, and it had grown to 100 acres. But it's in a limited protection area. And given the size of it at that point, they decided that they're just going to monitor this thing, and there was nothing threatened by it.
Crews kept an eye on the fire through the week, and it seemed to be burning itself out. This fire season is off to a slow start, but lightning storms sparked several new blazes around the western interior, keeping crews busy this week. Alaska Governor Bill Walker is trying to stave off a state government shutdown this week, ordering all of his agencies and departments to remind the public what will happen if it all comes to a grinding halt by July 1st.
Our focus of what we're doing, you know, today in this particular situation is really focused solely on being prepared. And that's really what it comes down to. As prepared as one can be, I'll put it that way, July 1.
State lawmakers are hunkered down in meetings in an ongoing special legislative session trying to hammer out a compromised budget to send to the governor. Walker's Fish and Game Commissioner Sam Cotton says his department will keep staff on task until the last possible minute.
We are working with the Department of Law to determine what we can do. We know that there'd be severe economic distress in a billion-dollar industry, and thousands of jobs could be affected, so we're not taking it lightly.
The current special session is scheduled to end a week from today. Seafood processors in Bristol Bay are working to staff up for the fishing season, which should start seeing harvest within a few weeks. Those that use the H-2B visa program to hire from overseas are running into some problems, according to State Seafood Employment Coordinator Nelson San Juan.
The cap or the number of limits that the employers could hire was met much quicker this year than last year. For the total number of workers allowed to work in the industry. So some of the employers are struggling for that reason.
San Juan says seafood processing companies are looking to hire more from within the U.S., looking to areas in the U.S. with high unemployment rates. One Bristol Bay processor said they still have more than 100 jobs to fill this season. Low water levels have been reported at many areas in Bristol Bay, including up at Iliamna Lake. That has made the portage route from Cook Inlet over the Williamsport Road tricky this year, but not impossible. Ray Williams with Iliamna Transportation Company says he does not recall a time when the water was this low.
Usually every spring the Quijack is a little low because the lake is so low. It's a little bit different this year because the lake is not only low, but there's not a lot of snow and we've had virtually no rain to help bring the lake level up. It has come up in the last month. But when I say it's coming up, usually we're talking about a foot or foot and a half, and instead it's more like 5 or 6 inches.
William says some boats are making the route, but he recommends that those that draft more than 3 feet go to Falls Pass, a trip that adds some 700 miles of travel. Local fishermen are closing in on this year's 4E halibut quota. BBEDC Regional Fish Coordinator Gary Klein offered an update Tuesday.
I'd say it picked up a little bit. So far, 43,000 pounds of halibut have been caught. That's leaving a little over 15,000 pounds of the 4E quota available. I would anticipate the quota being harvested within the next week. It seems likely that we'll roll over some quota to allow the fishers to at least target halibut towards the end of June.
21 boats were fishing halibut at the beginning of the week. Some said they were having trouble selling out their catch at the dock. The city of Igigik was expecting to get a new incinerator installed this week. The old one burned in a fire a year ago. City Administrator Don Strand says Igigik was just waiting on the barge to get the new 70,000-pound unit delivered.
Had we been on a road system somewhere where they could have, you know, trucked that stuff rather than wait for the ice to thaw out to barge it, it would have been done sooner, but we don't have that luxury.
A new building to house the incinerator in Igigik was put together over the winter. The town relied on the landfill 5 miles outside of town for its disposal needs over the winter. Superior Court Judge Tina Ray was formally installed on the bench in a ceremony last Friday. Alaska Chief Justice Craig Stowers presided and took his time to speak about the importance of respect for the law.
The greatest hazard a judge faces is not found without. The gravest danger, the most constant an appalling danger lurks within the judge herself. It is what the judge would call her conscience, what others refer to as her preconceptions or predilections, and what those who disagree with her denounce as her prejudice.
Ray was tapped by Governor Walker for the job, which was a promotion from her 3 years as magistrate judge. She replaced Pat Douglas, who retired last fall. Clerk of Court Tanya O'Connor now also serves as magistrate judge at the Dillingham Court. A short trial was held at the Dillingham Court this week. Fred Tom Hurley III, a 25-year-old man from Ekwok, was accused of second-degree sexual assault, but the jury did not take long to acquit him of the charge. Assistant District Attorney Dan Doty said he was disappointed but respected the jury's judgment.
It's our task to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a pretty high burden to meet. And, you know, sometimes in these sex assault cases, particularly where there's only one witness who's also the victim, it's very, very tough sometimes to meet that burden. I think that we did here, but the jury disagreed, and, you know, we respect that. That's their function, and so we're glad that they were here and that they did their service this way.
The case fell apart on the problematic testimony of the alleged victim, who was the only witness the state had to the incident in question. Hurley was ordered released in that case, but was still in custody on a charge he assaulted a jail guard and police officer earlier in the week. On Monday night, the Bristol Bay Borough Assembly voted 3-1 to offer a $1,500 tax rebate to fishermen who were installing RSW on their boats. Assemblymember Mary Swain helped push the ordinance change, saying it would be a good deal for the skippers and eventually the borough, too.
Well, the fishery, of course, is pushing a value-added product, and that's, of course, what we want to see come out of our Bristol Bay Borough waters, is value-added product. So this helps those, and those fishermen that are a little reluctant to go forward and put the RSW in their boats, that's what this ordinance is for.
Fish landed in the borough's annexed waters are subject to a 3% tax. The rebate can be applied to that tax bill and is good through next year. And the 2018 race for Alaska's only seat in Congress is taking shape. Incumbent Republican Don Young announced weeks ago that he is running again. And this week, Democrats Greg Fitch and Dimitri Shane said they will challenge Young. Fitch is the founder of the Juneau-based Mental Health Consumer Action Network, and Shane is an Anchorage-based CPA and businessman. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Commercial fishing opens next week here in Bristol Bay. Of course, it's officially open now, but the world's largest sockeye salmon fishery may see some effort as soon as Monday. Tim Sands is the manager who's offering this opportunity and joins us now. Tim, good morning and good to talk to you. You're just across the street here, but we just heard from your office a little bit ago that some fishing's going to kick off here next week, at least the opportunity. Can you explain?
Yeah, we did an announcement today for Igooshik fishing at Gillnet, and it's around this time every year that we open that up over there. When I first started here, we had a department test fish project in river over there, and that was a long ago budget cut victim. And so since then, we kind of used the set Gillnet fishery over there as a test fishery to see how things are progressing. There's quite a delay between when fish pass through the fishery area and when they get to the tower. It's about a 10-day swam for the fish up to the tower. And so the tower doesn't start until later, but we can get information by having the set netters fishing earlier. And as soon as the market is ready to buy, we open it up, and the fishermen gradually get started over there.
I know there are two buyers who normally go in over there. Are they both, are they ready to buy next week?
Yes, they'll be ready to buy at some point next week. Not, I don't know that they'll necessarily both be ready to buy on the first day, but at least one of them is ready to buy on the first day. And so since they're there and ready to provide opportunity, we want to provide opportunity as well.
You will have a tower there and in Togiak this year, correct?
We will have towers operational. That's the plan, state budget being what it
still
is.
Still in flux.
Right. But the plan is to have that going.
I guess at this point we don't even know if you'll be in a job in 3 weeks, but I think they'll get it sorted out. We've been trying to talk down south or to the folks in Juneau, and they're all in conference committee meetings and such today. So
right.
a lot up in the air. But another question for you, Tim, before we take more of this up in the fisheries report in the weeks ahead is just that the sonar is up and in, and it's counting some fish. Can you give us just the west side count update for the first part of the year here?
Sure. So right now the sonar is, they started counting on the 7th. They had a couple tweaks that they were working on. So right now the total number of fish through midnight last night was 1,650. And that's unapportioned fish. The sonar can just count fish. The apportionment comes in when they catch fish in their test drifts. So until that happens, we just have the raw counts.
And I know that the King camps are getting set up. I think their first clients are scheduled for not this week, but the next week, and some gill nets will probably be out not too long after that. And one last note for the listeners is that the fishing vessel Pandalus should start fishing, is it this weekend?
My understanding is that June 10th is the start of the Port Muller test fishery.
Exciting stuff. The industry is taking shape and gearing up, and we'll hear much more from area management biologist Tim Sands on the west side of Bristol Bay through the season. Tim, thanks for this today.
You're welcome, Dave. Talk to you later.
Professors from the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute come back to Bristol Bay each year to collect data and analyze the salmon run. The biologists have been catching this season's smolt samples from local waterways using a beach seine this week. KDLG's Nick Shalino went along for a day of fishing and to find out what else they'll be up to this year.
It's a cool, rainy morning on Alechnikik Lake, where FRI houses its team of biologists studying the Bristol Bay salmon run. The skies are gray, and you can see the fog settled on the slope of Bear Mountain across the lake.
Today we're going to go beach seining.
That's Jackie Carter. She's been a research scientist with FRI's Alaskan Salmon Program since 2004. But FRI has been using beach seines to catch and analyze adolescent salmon, also known as smolt, since 1962.
The guys who started this research program understood that if you want to learn something about sockeye salmon, you need to know something about the habitats in which they live at all life stages, and you need to know who their competitors are and what they're eating.
Professor Daniel Schindler is one of the UW faculty running the Alaskan Salmon Program. He says this kind of sustained, long-term data collection can be used to learn how salmon react to changes in their environment.
This year we're seeing very low water levels and warm water temperatures early. And of course, one of the questions is whether this is an abnormal year or whether it's part of a long-term trend. And you can only get perspective on that question is if you have long-term data.
Schindler says the warmer waters are definitely part of a trend over the last 30 or so years, but adds the salmon seem to be thriving.
What most people don't appreciate is that those warmer conditions have translated into better growth and survival conditions for salmon. So in fact, during the last 20 years, we're seeing more salmon produced out of these watersheds.
Back on the beach, Jackie Carter and her team pull in the seine to see what they've caught.
We're right across from the Ogulewak River, so we get a lot of variety. We have two Czech sockeye smolt. What that means is that they've spent two summers rearing in the lake, and we know that they're two Czechs because they're really big. We are also seeing one pink salmon, very small, very skinny, and a few juvenile Arctic char.
Carter and her team drive their skiff from beach to beach making sets, sealing the smolt in plastic bags and recording the water temperature. After a few hours of work, the smolt are brought to a lab where they are measured and weighed to record trends in growth. Biologists Jason Ching and Max Ramos take the measurements.
Scoping.
Is that a pink right there?
Yeah, it's like a pink. There's this sockeye there.
FRI's Alaskan salmon program started in the late 1940s before Alaska was a state. Not only have they sustained a thorough log of long-term data, but they continue to provide in-season analysis as the run progresses. Professor Schindler says he will interpret the run this summer by recording where fish are caught in the districts, as well as observing test fishery data and escapement numbers.
Parallel to that effort is work here in the watersheds looking at where the fish are spawning, how the individual tributaries build up fish on the spawning grounds, but also looking at, like I said, the environmental conditions and how the juvenile salmon are growing throughout the year.
Schindler says more scientists are on their way up to Bristol Bay to help with FRI's efforts, many of whom are grad students coming to study how to manage a fishery. FRI will be operating this summer from camps at Iliamna Lake, the Wood River, the Chicknick River, and Alaknagik Lake. In Dillingham, I'm Nick Schellino.
Well, things get busy a lot in a lot of ways this time of year. A lot of the activity this weekend is happening over in Naknek at the first ever Bristol Bay Fish Expo, which kicked off this morning. KDLG has a booth there, and we encourage folks to stop in and say hi to our staff. KDCOPS Wilson wears many hats over there and helped get this expo off the ground. I spoke with her this morning from what seemed like a very bustling event.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We are just so excited how this has all turned out and how many people are here. And we have 43 vendors attending today, which is pretty exciting because in our first year we have the same amount of vendors as Comfish in Kodiak, and they've been running for 35 years.
So that's sort of the standard to meet or beat there, I suppose, is Kodiak's fishing expo. What do you like? What are you seeing? Are fishermen connecting with industry and buyers and products and vice versa?
Yeah, we have such a variety of vendors here. It's pretty amazing, the variety of vendors and the a good feeling if people are just wandering about and visiting with all the different vendors and talking about braler bigs and fishing net and some local things like the Historical Society and King's Flying Service and just a huge array of support services for the fishing. And everybody's been pretty excited about this.
Does anybody have anything new or unique on display that's catching the attention of fishermen or folks?
Well, Fishy Fabrications, a local welder, aluminum welder, has a skiff that he had built, George Wilson Jr. He built a skiff here locally over the winter, and his skiff is parked right outside the school so everybody could look at it. Also, we have Dominic Adams, who is here with his net hanging business and some special net that he has invented, and he's showing that. He's also hosting the networking lounge here at the school. So there's some pretty cool stuff happening.
So you're modeled after Pacific Marine Expo, a kind of a scaled down and more targeted to our specific fishery thing here. In your mind, is this proving to be a success as I speak with you just an hour into the opening?
Yeah, and it's even better. It's even better than Marine, the Pacific Marine Expo, because it's just, it's more folksy and down home. Just now we had our opening ceremonies where we have the first salmon of the 2017 season, and the little kids of our community presented it to our elders, and we're able to celebrate the first fish of the season, and that was pretty amazing to see, and it was pretty cool to just understand that we're here because of the fish and how the fish are bringing us all together once again.
Katie Copps Wilson is helping plan and organize the first annual Bristol Bay Fish Expo happening this weekend in Naknek, which proceeds benefit the Little Angels Child Care Academy. Katie, thanks for the update from the showroom floor this morning.
You're welcome.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. Thanks for staying with us this week. In July, the village of Igiagig will complete the second year of its three-year language preservation and maintenance grant. The U.S. Administration for Native Americans awarded the grant, which totals over $850,000. With 23 fluent speakers of Lake Iliamna Yupik still living, the village of Igiagig is making a concerted effort to revive the language. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
The smell of caribou munyak roasting over an open fire mixes with sharp wood smoke. Annie Wilson, a short commanding 70-year-old, keeps up a steady stream of yupik. With a chunk of raw caribou skewered onto a long stick, she narrates what she's doing in her first language. Her language apprentices echo her words and phrases, trying to glean what they don't know by a mixture of context words they do know and charades. Wankuda Gunhyagait Nanvachpagamut Yuchstun is the name of the program. It means we all speak Lake Iliamna Yupik. And that's exactly what everyone is doing as they gather around the campfire on a bright May afternoon on a hill across the Kwijak River from Igiagig. They've been speaking exclusively in Yupik for 10 minutes when the timer goes off. Now Alexana Salmon, who has been facilitating this session, opens up the floor for questions in English.
Okay, we have 10 minutes. Us back. So, anybody confused about anything in...
Quite a bit, I didn't get.
Okay, we're learning a little bit about... So this thing is manyak, like a manyak stick, a device for manyaking, manyakjun.
Wilson was born and raised in Igiagig. She didn't speak English until she went to school in Leavelock at 10 years old. Now she's teaching the younger generation because she says it's vital for the preservation of culture.
Teaching Yupik makes you a stronger person from where you come from. We really respected our elders because without them we wouldn't be here as what we are. And being a Yupik makes you a stronger person, and you pass on your knowledge to the next generation.
In return for her efforts, she receives a stipend of a little over $800 a month. The six language learners or apprentices are also compensated for the time they spend learning the language. $15 per hour for participating in group projects, like the session on Munyak around the campfire, $25 per hour for one-on-one conversations with elders in their homes. This is all done through a grant from the U.S. Administration for Native Americans. With local entities like the Igiagig Native Corporation and Village Council and School District matching 25% of the grant, the total funding for the project is substantial. And according to those in the village, so are the returns. Alexana Salmon is the Igiagig Village Council president.
It feels like we've had that monumental shift. So now it's just keeping momentum and working towards fluency. Now you will have students that walk past each other and say waka, you know, waka manak. That's coming from them on their own. The mountain has been moved.
Teaching children is another facet of the project. The language apprentices teach Yupik at the village school 30 minutes a day, 4 days a week during the school year. They're taking another step in the fall, opening Unglu, a Yupik immersion pre-kindergarten. It will run 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Like Wilson, Salmon emphasizes that the revitalization program has a deeper significance than simply the preservation of a way of speaking.
It wasn't our people that sat down and said, oh, you know, we should stop speaking this. And it wasn't until you realize the effects of colonization that you realize, oh, in order to counteract all this negative that we have, all these crime rates, dropout rates, suicides, that can all be addressed if we go back to who we are and be our true Yupik selves. And how do you do that? You go to the language first. And with that, you'll get your dance, you'll get your worldview, you'll find your values back.
As the children in the village engage more with their native heritage through their native language, she sees a paradigm shift.
One of the middle school students told me that when she goes to college, she's going to study Yupik. And it almost made me cry because you never used to hear kids say, oh, I'm going to college. And now they're saying, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to keep studying this because it inspires me.
Going forward, the village has not decided if it will reapply for the grant. Salmon says that it has been a catalyst for revitalization, but they may be at a point where they can keep up the momentum without the time-consuming administrative work that comes with grant funding. Outside funding or no, it's clear when Salmon's elementary-age daughter comes forward to pray for dinner and the rest of the village joins in that Wangkura Gonhagait Nanvach Pagamut Yuchstun is more than the name of a grant program and more than a wish. For KDLG, I'm Avery Lill.
Amen. And you can find all of the stories from our series from Igiagig posted at kdlg.org. That's just about it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. Send feedback and story ideas to dave@kdlg.org, and you can reach any of us in the newsroom at the station or by emailing news@kdlg.org. We really do enjoy hearing what you have to say, and in that vein, we send Allison Mollenkamp and Caitlin Tan around boatyards in Dillingham and Naknek to see what's on your mind before fishing starts. We'll leave you with that audio postcard here. I'm Dave Benninger. Hope to see you back next week.
It's Andrei Plisko. I'm from Russia. I got in the United States in 1996. I'm going to work for Ocean Beauty. We're painting the boat. We're fixing things, little things here and there. You know, you gotta paint the hatch. You gotta like paint here, the ground a little bit here, do little things over there and here, you know. Alaska is the best place to be.
My name is Tesla Davidson, and I'm with the Sound and Fury crew. I'm redoing the upholstery for the boat. This is my first year, and my brother has a boat, a lot of my friends have boats, so I've always wanted to come up and check it out. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'll be really sad to go.
Yeah, Eric Olson, Aventura. I bought this boat in 2009, 2010. 2009 was actually my first season. So yeah, I'm kind of a youngin' as far as Bristol Bay goes for salmon, but I've been fishing king crab since 88 in Bristol Bay. They broke into my window through the boat with a crowbar, which the other window was unlocked. And then Noah sent me a picture, and Tom Glass, one of the guys in town, made me a template. Before I could even get back up here, they broke in again, broke another window. And then during the course of trying to repair a window, I've got a third one now.
Bob Gray on the Arthur. We've got a sow with three cubs. So the cubs are two-year-olds now. They're, getting me a problem. They know where pretty much everybody's garbage trucks are at and all the different boat yards. And we had them in here last night. They went into the garbage truck.
Well, my name is Kurt Guide, and I'm the owner of the fishing vessel Equinox. And this is my 37th season here in the bay. Seems to me it's better to fish later than earlier in the season because everybody's so excited and hungry that it's tough.
My name is Butch Bergloff. I'm working on the Kluka Queen. We're putting a guard around the outdrives on it to protect them so they won't be damaged. Being the first time really in the fishing industry, I worked at the power plant here in Dillingham for over 30 years and retired from that, and this is new to me, and I've enjoyed the learning experience with the mistakes that go along with it, but it's interesting, it's fun, keeps you busy, and it's a challenge, so that's what I like.